It was just last month that the world's attention was on Tahrir Square and the youthful protesters there, organized through Facebook and Twitter, demanding democracy and an end to corruption. Remember when President Hosni Mubarak stepped down, we reached a weary but jubilant Wael Ghanem, the Google executive who'd become sort of the face of the opposition.
All what I can say is welcome back, Egypt. They told us you died, but, you know, hundreds of thousands of us went to the streets at the beginning. In 20 days, we became 20 million until we found you. Welcome back, Egypt.
Welcome back, Egypt. But which Egypt? The military is now running the country, reportedly in tacit agreement with the formerly banned Islamist group, the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, one young member of the opposition has started a new movement to save the revolution, calling for civilians to be a part of the government transitional council, something that was talked about during the revolt but seems to have been forgotten. So, again, where are we in Egypt? Joining us, two Egyptians watching closely, Farouk Elbaz, a scientific researcher at Boston University, frequent guest on Here and Now. He supported the revolution and has family in the Egyptian military. Farouk, welcome back.
Thank you.
And also with us, Soha Bayoumi, a doctoral candidate in political philosophy at the Paris Institute of Political Studies and visiting fellow and a teaching assistant at Harvard, in close contact with Egypt's youth leaders and presidential candidate Mohamed El-Baradei. Soha, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And let's start with you, because this is where a lot of people left off on the story of Egypt with the opposition. We know that many youthful opposition groups are proud that this was a leaderless movement, something they adopted from other movements and books on nonviolent resistance by people like Gene Sharp. But was that a mistake? Because now, while some opposition members consult on occasion with the military council, they don't have a seat on the council.
No, they don't. But I don't think it is a mistake, Robin. I think it is a good thing. I think that it is important that people rallied around demands and not around a person or a few persons. There were micro leaders, if we can say so, on the ground during the revolution, and we still have a coalition of youth leaders that the military meets with regularly in order to decide on what is supposed to happen, or at least to take the opinion of the young people. So I don't think it is a bad thing. I still think had we had a leader, it would have been easy to tarnish his image or her image. And I still think that it is a good thing that people are rallying around a clear set of demands that have been there during the days of the revolution in Tahrir Square.
And what are some of those demands? Because we know one of them was for civilian participation in the government. So
absolutely.
What are some of the others?
It was not about civilian participation in the government. The idea was not to have the military take over in the first place. But, of course, we were lucky that the military decided to, in the beginning at least, be neutral and then to take the side of the people and to ask the president to step down.
So you're saying that sort of gave some relief to that demand for the opposition? Because
Of course, but it is important that the military council from day one said in its first declaration said that they are keen on handing the government to a civilian government. And we trust the military. It is in the self-interest of the military to do that.
For Americans, that's sometimes hard to hear, especially as we watch what's happened in other countries mm-hmm. where the military is not let go. Mm-hmm. Just to remind us what you base that trust on.
I don't trust the military because of inherent qualities that they have. I am naturally skeptic towards the military, but I trust that the self-interest of the military would make them hand power to a civilian government.
Well, in this military in particular is a military that is incredibly invested. They are more
Absolutely.
Of a corporation. They
Yes.
run businesses. They,
Yeah. In some estimates, it's about 40% of the economy that the military controls.
Again, and that's exactly what the people know about them, and that's exactly what they expect, because the military would go back to their own function in the society so that they'll get back to the riches that they have.
So you're saying, in fact, the military has a lot to lose
yes.
if they don't do as the as they've promised.
Absolutely. It's a very profitable corporation, and they want to go back to that.
Yeah. Well, and the opposition did force a seat on the interim cabinet. This was Essam Sharif. He's become the prime minister, a university professor and figure from the opposition. But, Farouk, do you agree with Soha's analysis that for now, this is the right way to go?
Yeah, there are two things that I agree with Soha about. First of all, that the fact that there should have been no leadership in the opposition, in the movement, because if there was a leader, he would have made concessions. But there were no concessions. The revolution stood for things, and they got them all. Second, yes, indeed, the military council has always said, we are not going to rule. And the government in today's Egypt is completely civilian, and it's run by, as you said, this university professor.
Yeah, but it's the military that's making announcements like last week approving a draft law that bans some strikes and demonstrations.
Yes, because the military itself is the one that is ruling in place of a president. And therefore, the prime minister really cannot issue these edicts. Yeah. It's the military that can do it. The military council is the only one that can do it.
Well, and what do you think about that? I mean, that raised a lot of eyebrows. Soha, you were saying you want to say something there.
Yeah, I don't think that things are exactly going the right way. Or maybe they are going in the right way, but not with the right speed. So I still have some problems and some reservations as to the draft law against
the strikes
and the protests. And I think that there is a need for more transparency. There is a need for more open dialogue between the military council and the different political forces. This needs to be done as soon as possible. As Dr. Farouk said, it is the cabinet that drafts the decrees or the edicts, but it is the military, the Supreme Council, that has to ratify those edicts and. That has not been verified as far as I know.
It's just a draft right now.
It is still a draft and has not been ratified by the military council because of the type of protest and opposition that we have been seeing in the streets of Cairo against that type of law.
Well, in fact, Soha, I want you to take a second there and paint that for us. I mean, there are still protests and demonstrations going on every day. For what?
For several things. There are strikes, there are labor strikes, and there are professional strikes. There are protests in the different professional syndicates that are state-owned and state-run, and there are protests for minimum wage, for example.
So Farouk Abbas, we hear that you agree with this call, this draft for now law that would ban strikes and demonstrations, some strikes and demonstrations. That seems to fly in the face of everything Egyptians have just been able to achieve, being able to go out and have a voice in Tahrir Square even today.
Not at all. It is the matter of are you going to go back to work or are you not going to go back to work? Are you going to remain in the streets forever? Because on a daily basis, there is some group or other that's requesting a raise in the salary. We don't have the money for your salary of today. How can you ask for a raise in the salary?
So you're saying it's a matter of the economy.
It's a matter of the economy. The country cannot move unless there is a decent income so that you can do the things that you need to do. But you cannot keep the country absolutely out of work forever.
We're taking a look at Egypt today with Farouk Elbaz, a scientist at Boston University, and Soha Bayoumi, a visiting fellow at Harvard. Now, the opposition movement in Egypt doesn't have a seat on the military Supreme Council, but is very vibrant. It's also very split. Some of the people in the opposition saying, our work is finished, Mubarak is gone. Others saying, no, we have to continue fighting. The country is now being ruled by a military council. State media announced today that Egypt's military has decided to hold presidential elections at the latest in November. That would be a month or two after the parliamentary elections, which are now slated for September. That was seen as a concession. It's later than previously thought to give people time to organize political parties. Farouk Elbaz, let's start with you. You have two brothers who we should say were very high up in the military. They're now retired. We understand that a figurehead is a general named Mohamed Hussein Tantawi. In a recent WikiLeaks cable, he's been described as Mubarak's poodle, so it doesn't sound like he's running the country. We're hearing of a general named Sami Inan, who is the chief of armed forces. Now, the New York Times says many people hope he'll be the Pentagon's man in Egypt.
Well, he is, because he is a very close person to the American military establishment. Sami Inan is more of a man with a personality. He knows how to maneuver. He knows how to talk to people. Tantawi does not. And Sami Inan has been in the U.S. every year, and he ruled all the cooperation between the American military and the Egyptian military. That's why the American military or the American administration keeps talking about him, because he understands them, he speaks English. Tantawi does not. However, the council is a council, and they decide collectively.
Well, and we talked about some of the things the military has been doing in the last week, approving a draft law that might ban some strikes and demonstrations. But on the other hand, they've announced that there will be elections in September. This is a month later than originally planned, and that's seen as a way to give new political parties more time to prepare. They also promised to lift the emergency law by those elections, and they've set out limitations on who can form a political party. They've announced a ban on the formation of political parties on religious grounds. Soha, your thoughts on that?
Well, yes. The point is that I have no problem with the Muslim Brotherhood or any other group forming its political party, as long as it does not discriminate against anyone in its program, in the conditions of its membership. I have to say that the Muslim Brotherhood has to clearly state that they have no problem with women or Copts or anyone else.
Coptic Christians.
Coptic yeah. Christians.
Now, we mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood. They're, of course, the Islamist group that was banned for decades.
Yes.
They were very anti-regime, but uncomfortable with the youthful, somewhat more secular opposition movement initially. They didn't join initially, and then they did.
Yes.
And now people say they're stepping into a vacuum in the country. But, Farouk, we understand that while there was a fear that the Muslim Brotherhood would mean a return to a strict fundamentalist rule, there's been a generational divide within the Muslim Brotherhood. There are younger members who are coming forward, having met these more secular opposition members during the protests, and that maybe the Muslim Brotherhood is changing.
No, there is not. That is the view of the West. But in real life, it would be very dangerous to have any party of any sort that is based on religious or other reasons. This is very dangerous, and it should not be. This political party is for politics, and it should allow everybody to have an opinion, and they should not be tainted by any religion whatsoever.
Well, so the Muslim Brotherhood has said that they're planning to establish a party. How do they get around that?
But that's what they say, that we'll allow Copts and we'll allow women to become. However, this is an Islamic party, and therefore we're going to go by the Sharia, and we're going to... No, but if you say that, and without calling it Islamic or run it with any of the religious things, fine with us. But not to just hide it and say, yeah, but we're allow any Copts and we're allow women to
do come. You agree that they may just sort of window dress just to get by this new ban, but it might still be an Islamist group?
Absolutely. The point is that everything has to be very clear, because as long as the party sticks to human rights, to the principles of democracy that are stated in the Constitution and in the different laws guaranteeing liberties and democracy.
And does not call itself Islamic.
Well, there are the Christian Democrats, for example, in Europe, and
they have Christian
principles rule and govern their politics. It's kind of a reference to Christian principles, but of course they stick to the principles of democracy, human rights and liberty, equality or equal opportunity, and they do not discriminate against anybody, either in their membership or in their elections.
We cannot afford that in Egypt, actually. We cannot afford that in Egypt at this time, because the Copts would not accept that. And the Copts constitute maybe 20% of the Egyptian population, and we should be very sensitive to them. There is absolutely no reason to call themselves Islamic.
So how the Muslim Brotherhood threads this needle, you know, this ban on political parties based on religion, is something that you'll obviously be watching very closely. But overall, I just want to ask both of you. I mean, obviously there are problems. I can't remember a country that turned on a dime in 3 weeks and everybody was happy. Overall, how are you each feeling about the Egypt that's emerging? Soha?
I'm optimistic. Most importantly, because I don't think that we have the luxury of being pessimistic. I think that we have to act, we have to hope, and act according to our hopes and according to the demands that we rallied around from the beginning, and to have leverage. Leverage, I believe it is important to have leverage on the streets of Egypt in order to make sure that things go in the right direction, but also, and most importantly, with the right speed and in the right way.
Farouk Elbaz, your view, how are you feeling about the new Egypt election?
I'm elated. I'm delighted. I know that after every revolution, there will be a time of uncertainty. So, of course, there should be months of uncertainty. There should be months of not knowing what to do after any revolution. So it is moving in the right direction and moving very well and progressing a lot more than I actually expected. So it is going in the right direction.
That's Farouk Elbaz. He's a research professor and director of the Center for Remote Sensing at Boston University, but, of course, an Egyptian. Farouk, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Soha Bayoumi, a doctoral candidate on political philosophy at the Paris Institute of Political Studies and a visiting fellow and teaching assistant right now at Harvard. Soha, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.